I'm your host, Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon. Thanks for tuning in to our lovely downtown studios here at 200 Peachtree this morning.
That's right. We are happy to be here as always. And we have a guest in the studio this morning.
Yes. Today we are lucky to have Mr. Barry Swartz with us, who is the Vice President of Trade and Development of the American Israel Chamber of Commerce, the Southeast Region. Barry, welcome.
Thank you for having me and for inviting me to be with you this morning.
Absolutely. We're pleased to get to share the morning with you and talk about what's been going on in the city of the ATL lately.
I know. Not a whole lot now. I mean, well, I'm sure there is a whole lot. But for me personally, I just want to bring up something because I was driving down here. And I think it was it last week that we talked about the new license plates? Or was that 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago because we were off last week.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
We were lazy last week, sleeping in. Well, I was driving down the road this morning and I saw one of the new license plates right in front of me and it looks fake. It looks like a Barbie license plate.
Ironic.
It's so weird looking. Have you seen
because
it, Mary?
I have not seen the new license plate.
The whole intention of it was that you couldn't fake it.
Right.
And now it looks fake.
It's like digital. And so it's flat instead of the raised numbers that we're used to. So it's just completely flat. And that supposedly there's a digital aspect to it now, I guess, for the police or whatever. They can do something with it so that, A, you can't fake them. You can't change them easily. And also, I guess, so they can look you up faster, better, easier. I don't know. But it really looks like a Barbie, like something off the back of a Barbie car. It's really funny to me.
Well, I'm Canadian, so I'm used to funny money. We have
that's true.
We have new and different denominations and
all
kinds
time.
Of money in Canada. Loonies, toonies, paper money that looks like it was designed by kindergarten children. So
nice. So you're used,
used
to it.
All
right.
So I wonder if with the new digital license plate, if you can now check into your car in Facebook.
You know what? If that doesn't exist, it's probably coming.
So speaking of Facebook, the Facebook IPO has been making big news lately, mostly because it's a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah. So talk about that. What's going on?
Mr. Mark Zuckerberg has had a bad week or bad couple of days. So Facebook, floated their shares on Friday and it did not close above the initial price and has continued to kind of slowly decline daily. So it was much hyped about that initial public offering. And I believe what happened, they were saying, was the Wednesday before they actually decided to release more shares than had initially been approved. So they kind of like artificially increased the supply 2 days before putting it out there. So everyone who has placed orders, so let's say I bought 500,000 shares.
Which of course you did. Of course.
No, I'm glad I didn't because it's really not looking like it was a great investment at this point. But alas, hindsight is 20/20. So, right, if you placed a buy order for 500,000 shares, you just found out on Wednesday that you were actually getting 700,000 shares. So,
Weird, and
that happened to everyone. So, brokers were calling each other saying, hey, did you get more shares than you initially requested? And so by putting more shares out there, you put less upward pressure on the price,
right?
Obviously at this critical moment when you're putting it out there for public shares
the first
time. Diluting
the value. Yeah.
But there's been a couple of other sort of snafus along the way. I mean, with the NASDAQ technical glitch on the morning of. So it's kind of been tripped with bad luck.
Yeah. Which
we'll hope things turn around for the FB.
Maybe they're doing that all just so they can make another movie. What do you think?
Maybe. And then he got married, the day after. Did you see that?
Come on. You know that's going to be a movie. Come on.
To the girl that was, I think, in the movie. I mean, for the character in the movie.
Yeah, it's going to be a movie. It's going to be like the second Facebook movie.
Facebook,
too. Yeah. It totally is. What else is going on around town? Well, I guess if we're talking about tech stuff, we should talk about HP cutting jobs. Did you see that story?
Yes.
Hewlett-Packard planning to cut 30,000 jobs. That's not good.
No.
Every time we talk about things getting better, then you hear a story about things not so much getting better.
Definitely, we need to look for some other avenues for job creation to offset those kind of cutbacks.
Yeah. Did you see where the bulk of those jobs are going to be? Do you know?
I do not know specifically.
I don't either. Guess we'll have to do a little more research
before we start talking about a story that we know nothing about. But you know what I do know a lot about now that I'd know very little about before was Changzhou, China. Last night I went to the Changzhou Meets Atlanta bilateral trade seminar.
Wow.
And all of the who's who from Changzhou was here in town in Atlanta, the mayor Yao and all these people.
Wow.
And it was very interesting. They talked about and Changzhou, China is apparently like the Atlanta of China.
Okay.
A lot of what they discussed was the similarities between the two cities, one of which being access to a very educated and highly technical workforce, like with Georgia Tech being here. They've got a lot of science and tech great schools there. And they just talked about all the great things about it. It's a very ecological city and great place to do business. And they're wanting people from Atlanta to invest in China. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about was the international airport. You know, we're now officially open.
I know. And it's a very confusing if you haven't already tried it. I haven't, but I keep seeing all the signs on the roads.
I will be trying it for the first time on Friday.
Oh, really?
To drive a passenger for an international flight.
Yes.
Drop off.
I thought you were going somewhere.
Not
I was excited for you.
Not me personally, no.
Barry, have you checked it out yet?
I have not checked out the new airport, and having spent the past 25 years flying millions of miles, I anticipated that it would be a positive thing. Having to wait for my luggage on all these international flights, they used to take forever and ever.
Yeah.
But I can't believe it's that complicated. You go to one place for international flights and the other terminals for domestic flights.
Sure.
What is complicated about this?
Are you saying that I'm a little bit slow, Barry?
Here's
the thing, I guess, that's just making me feel like it. Because I mean, just the fact that there's a different exit off the highway, I think, is what I find.
It's just, you know, you've got your driving to the airport routine.
Yeah.
Go 85
where you
south.
Park.
Where you park. Right. So the idea of going on 75 south is like, oh, wow, that's a whole nother airport.
Right. And then
routine.
You're like, what do? I've been going to that airport for 20-something years, doing it one way. And now all of a sudden you want me to change, Barry?
Well,
Come on.
I think you're raising an important issue because I have parked in the same place for the past 23 plus years.
See?
Right.
And the question is, can that particular company take you to the international terminal?
Right. Are those vans going to cross over to the
Right. And what if
side?
I take MARTA? What do I do with MARTA? See, there's a lot of questions
here.
Well,
I have a more complicated question because I go to visit my family in Canada all the time. And for the most part, a trip to Toronto is not treated as a quote international flight.
See, another
so
question.
So which terminal will I leave from?
See, I told you it was complicated and you thought I was being silly, but I feel like it is a little complicated. I mean, I would have just assumed that it would have been the same highway exit, the same entrance to the airport. And then once you're in the airport, you just stay on the train longer or whatever to get to the international terminal. But no.
Well, right. I'll add another level of complication. I know too much. So if you're leaving from the E-terminal, the former international terminal, which still has international flights,
also confusing.
Which terminal do you go to? Do you go to the new one? You go to the old one?
I presume
you go to the new one, and then you take the train to Concourse E.
I think this – if I were a video producer, I could see a great, funny video, but like also educational of like –
comedy
two bumbling travelers who need to get on an international flight for the first time, like starting out at home going like, okay, here we go. And then like driving down the road and figuring out where to go. And you know what I mean? I think that could be really helpful for travelers because I feel a little bit confused. So the next time I go to do an international flight, I'm sure I'm going to be a little bit like, okay, what do I do?
Well, what's confusing is that there's a terminal T before terminal A.
That is also, for people who don't know Atlanta, like for those of
Precisely.
Us who've been here,
right.
we get
most,
it.
Most of the passengers do not travel through the airport.
Correct.
Directly from Atlanta.
Correct.
And they're constantly getting off at the wrong station,
yeah.
despite the signs.
So. Yeah. Why don't they?
Right.
They should fix
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Well, if you thought, oh, I'm going down in the alphabet or towards
right.
the beginning. Oh, wait. No, now it's T. Oh, I'm going the wrong way.
I know. It is
I'm
weird.
Switch direction.
It's one of those things, you know, when a city grows up, and that happens in cities all the time, the city planning, it grows up over time. Things like that happen. And of course, that happened to our airport. But you'd think they could have come up with, like, another name for that terminal once they made it officially a terminal, you know, like A-.
Or they could have named it after prominent Atlantans. Each terminal could have had a prominent Atlantan. There's the Maynard Jackson New International Terminal.
Right, he got
we
the whole
We should find
terminal.
The Andrew Young Terminal.
That's true. They should just rename them. Or they could do zoo animals. Giraffe.
Maybe.
No. Or they could just have them sponsored, because that's what everything goes to, right? They could be paid for.
Bought the Coca-Cola terminal.
Yeah.
The Georgia Aquarium terminal.
Right. The Delta terminal. Well, that wouldn't work. Never mind. The UPS terminal. Although there really is the Delta almost, right? I mean, there's a couple of the terminals that are almost
all
Delta.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of segmented as much as they can be by airline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they need to fix that T thing. You're right. See, it gets more and more confusing every year. Unbelievable.
But I mean, there obviously will be a little bit of confusion going into it, but it's such a great thing for the city.
Oh yeah,
and to really solidify our place as the international gateway on.
I would like to have
the East Coast.
I don't have any international travel plan, but I would really like to have a field trip down there just to see it.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, no, it's not weird. And I actually know somebody over at the airport, and he offered to give us a tour.
Oh, really?
Media tour. Yeah.
Oh, let's totally do that. And we'll bring a video camera and make a video. I think that would be awesome.
You understand that the international travel to and from Atlanta is a bit of a sore point for the American Israel Chamber of Commerce. For several years, Delta had direct flights to Israel, to Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
And they no longer have them. You have to fly through New York or through Europe or, on another airline through Toronto.
Right, another airline.
Or Newark Airport. And so this is a bit of a challenge for us, because we want to encourage businesses to come to the Southeast and in particular to Atlanta. And without direct flights, it becomes that much more complicated and cumbersome.
So did it go away just because there wasn't enough demand?
No, the demand was there. My understanding from the airlines was that it was an issue of utilizing planes in a more efficient, effective way, and that more money could be made for them on travel to the Far East than to Israel.
Oh, that's not good.
Wow.
Barry, go kick some butt.
Well, our plan is to try to revisit the conversation with whomever. So
I have to say, though, the last time I went to Israel, which was probably, could be 10 years ago, maybe a little more. I forget now.
We need to get you back.
I lose track of time. My daughter just went in January, actually. She went on Birthright.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Oh, I was involved with Birthright.
Yeah, she loved it. You know what that is, Elizabeth?
No.
Oh, well, should we share that with our listeners? So Birthright, and you can correct me if I'm getting it not exactly right, but Birthright is basically a free trip to Israel for Jewish kids ages, I think it's 18 through
26.
20s. Okay, I knew it was master's. And there's a college group and a master's group, I think, that go. And it's really just a chance for kids to get – it's totally free, which is great, because we never could have afforded to send her. And so it's a really nice chance for them to go see Israel and learn all about it. It's very educational, and they go with other kids their age, and it's really cool. So she did it in January and had a great time. But, yes, we had to fly to and she was very – my daughter's very independent and whatever, but she got a little intimidated because it was leaving from Newark. And she was
– She flew continental.
She was I don't remember, I guess. And she
or
was
LL,
she was here, and she was coming home for Christmas break, whatever, holiday break. And she was sort of I don't know if I can get there, because it was leaving on January 1st. She was like, do I stay the night before somewhere and get myself to the airport? So I ended up going with her to New York, and I took her to the airport. We had a fun New Year's in New York. So it worked out. But you're right. If there had been direct flights from here, that would have been nice.
Would have been a lot easier. Yeah, Birthright is a partnership of philanthropists. Charles Bronfman, Michael Steinhardt, a number of other, the Schusterman Foundation, a number of other major philanthropists, Mr. Marcus, Bernie Marcus from Atlanta, major supporter,
right.
The Jewish Federation Movement, the Jewish Agency for Israel, which is an organization that helped with the ingathering of exiles after the Second World War and then became the liaison organization to the diaspora Jews, and then finally the Government of Israel. And all of them contribute funds so that we have these trips. They're trips that are tailored for outdoors people, historical people. Colleges have their own. So it's really customized. And everybody that I talk to that comes back has a spectacular experience.
Yeah, my daughter did. But
fantastic.
I was going to say, yeah, very cool. So anybody who's listening who is Jewish and eligible, you really should consider doing it. Just saying.
Right. But, what a wonderful opportunity.
I know. I'm sorry that it wasn't around when I was that age. But I was going to say, last time I went, I've been twice, I think, in my life. And the last time I went was, like I said, 10 or 12 years ago, something like that. But I flew Air Canada, and it was great. I was totally digging it. Like, it was a really great service. I don't know if it still is, but it was like,
still is.
It was really a good way to go. So sorry, Delta. Air Canada is better. Sorry.
As a matter of fact, I was discussing this the other day with somebody, and someone said, people don't fly to Toronto to go to Israel. I said, yes, they do.
The ones that know. And, you know, I think I knew because actually a couple of my good friends that live here in Atlanta are Canadian and happen to be Jewish and told me that was the way to do it. And they were right. So anyway, sorry, Delta. Unless you want to sponsor the show, I think it's okay for us to talk about the competition.
An unbiased view of the business community.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk a little bit more to Barry about his role as Vice President of Trade and Development at the American Israel Chamber of Commerce. And you're relatively new to the chamber. Most recently, right before that, you had spent 20 years.
25 plus years
as with the Jewish Federation of North America.
Before we jump totally into your role, can you talk just a little bit about the organization and what it does and what its mission is and all of that?
Sure. The American Israel Chamber of Commerce is celebrating its 20th anniversary. We just passed this important milestone. Its goal, its purpose, its mission is to increase economic development by fostering understanding, cooperation, and business relationships between Israel and the Southeast United States. When I make presentations now, I have a great slide. 20 years ago, the organization was founded, in essence, because of the large immigration of Jews from the former Soviet Union to Israel, over a million. And the issue was, how do we find employment for these people, many of them highly educated? But the goal at the time was to bring Israeli products to the market in the United States. And my slide has a big Jaffa orange, because that was the probably the most noteworthy brand that Israel had at that time, and that was the purpose, to bring products to the United States. Well, over 20 years, the situation has changed dramatically, and now I use a flash drive as my example of the kinds of technology that Israel is innovating and bringing to the marketplace globally. So our job is to foster these relationships. We're like a connector. We have one of our members is from Cisco, and I used the word router, and he said, router, we're not routing anymore. We're switching. We're connecting. So I have to update my
technology analogies.
Except I'm an immigrant to it, although we couldn't find a better one, to be quite honest. So connector is a good one, and we connect people. And it used to be that the traffic was one way, that it was bringing Israeli innovation to the United States. But now Americans are wanting to seek innovation, thought leadership, products, do business in Israel, so that it's remarkable how things have matured over a 20-year period of time so quickly.
Yeah.
We are a membership organization. We have over 600 members. We cover six states, North and South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, and Mississippi. Israeli companies are active in all of those states. We have 75-plus Israeli companies that have either North American headquarters, U.S. headquarters, or regional headquarters.
So that
in the Southeast.
Who is the membership? Is that who the membership is? Those kinds of companies?
Those kinds of companies are members. And then we also have members, U.S. companies, U.S. businesses that are members here. We have close to 600 members of our organization. It's very active. We have programming on a monthly basis. We function on a committee basis. We really function as a chamber of commerce. And we have committees where we populate those committees with expertise, both domestic and overseas. And we bring Israeli companies over to be screened as to how we best can help them, as well as how we can best help American companies do business in Israel as well. So we have a clean tech committee, water and energy. We're around industries primarily. Water and energy is an important expertise that Israel has to offer. There are a lot of major companies, I won't name them because they believe in confidentiality, but a lot of major companies in Metro Atlanta that are extremely interested in water and the expertise that Israel has to offer. We have a medical committee, which is probably our most active at the moment. The medical products, health IT, that Israel brings to the world is mind-boggling. You probably know that stents for the heart were invented in Israel, and then when they invented those, they added medication to them, and now we're seeing a new generation of stents. There's all sorts of medical devices and products that are being brought to the United States. In our area, probably the most prominent is a company called Given Imaging. Given Imaging invented the pill cam.
The pill cam.
Yeah. So their North American headquarters is here in Metro Atlanta. And they're still the only country in the world that does not permit gastroenterologists to use this pill cam is the United States. We're still waiting for FDA approval. I think they're hoping, and I don't want to speak for them, within the next year to year and a half, they'll have it.
Why is that always the case? It's like we're the most advanced country, and then we're so regulated that we can't get some of the...
We're a litigious society.
Yes,
and
people we are.
Concerned about life.
Well, it's weird because sometimes it feels like it takes too long to get things to market, but then you also on the other side see on the recalls that we rushed things to market that we should have taken a little more time with.
Yeah.
So it's almost like we miss on both fronts.
I know, it is true. It is. It's kind of unfortunate. I mean, I feel like it's one of those things where something like that, where it could really be life-saving, I wish you could sort of have the choice. Like, that's know right. what the risks are as an individual and be able to say, you know what, I'm willing to risk that.
No question. Although the old methods still work. And unfortunately,
yeah,
as I've
right.
advised by Given Imaging, the prep has to be done for the pill cam. So that seems to be the onerous part of the process.
Yeah.
The most uncomfortable.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah,
And then the other committees we have, we're now in the midst of a marriage between our communications committee and our software committee. What we've realized is that the world is so integrated today that one can't distinguish between communication technology, software technology. It's all inextricably linked, and we're now negotiating how we're going to move forward in terms of our work plan and that whole arena, but that is a major arena for us. I don't have to tell you, from cloud security to financial technology. As you all know, Atlanta is the hub for North America for financial technology firms, so there's a lot of activity. We hope to do a program, a business exchange in November around the whole issue of financial technology. So security. When you enter Hartsfield International Airport, they're using Israeli security technology. So these are the areas. And then we have an annual gala every year.
I like galas.
That's right. And we do this
for... Who doesn't love a gala?
We do this for two reasons. One, because we bring to the United States a speaker from Israel who is renowned and somebody who is at the cutting edge of what's going on in the business community. And this year, on June 12th, we have Jonathan Medved. Jonathan Medved is one of the great venture capitalist entrepreneurs of Israel, featured in the book Startup Nation, which I commend everybody to read. If you want to read a great business book that's an easy read on a vacation coming up this summer, please read up Startup Nation. Dan Senior, Saul Singer are the authors. It's in paperback. It is the preeminent book about how a country, a young country, takes its thought leadership and creates a business climate and activity that's just remarkable. And Jonathan's featured in this book. The business that he was associated with, which was into digital sounds, was just purchased, and I believe Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, I think formerly Sun Systems, bought a ownership stake in that business.
Wow.
Jonathan's coming to speak. So and then we have a lot of professional service firms that are involved with us. There's a lot of activity, that transactional activity takes place with businesses coming here, doing business in Israel, and we have a professional seminar every year to help lawyers, accountants, personnel recruiters, real estate people do business with and in Israel.
It sounds like there's a lot of resources available to people who are interested in doing business with Israel, whether it be doing business there or bringing products or services from Israel here to the United States. How do you help companies figure out how to navigate that bilateral trade And any legalities or sure. anything they need to know from international business standpoint.
Well, it's a great question, and our resources are our members, and our members have the expertise, and we try to find other expertise. As a matter of fact, at our last professional committee meeting, we had an attorney from Israel talk about some of the new laws and new taxes that were just instituted, also some of the new business incentives, so that we try to keep current. We use our members when people join the chamber and or have specific questions for us. We connect them with other members to provide the expertise that they need, whether it's domestically here in the United States or over in Israel. So it's the old barter system, but people have an incentive because, number one, there's a greater good. They have an interest in creating jobs here in the United States, and we really want to do that. And there are thousands of jobs here because of our activity. And we're not bringing foreigners over. These are Americans working here in the United States for Israeli companies. And we also want to create business ties, and we network people, and we're able to do so.
What's the size of the American-Israel business community's presence here in Metro Atlanta?
In Metro Atlanta, we have 45 businesses, Israeli companies that have offices in the Metro Atlanta area. There are other companies that have representatives here doing business. There are others that come here to do business from other parts of the United States.
And there are kind of a wide range of industries?
The complete gamut and spectrum of industries, from a company in North Carolina that makes wipes and diapers, a kibbutz manufacturing company, to a neuroscience engineering company, Alpha Omega. So we have a wide spectrum of companies that we assist. As a matter of fact, there are two agritech companies that I've been working with lately to try to bring them to the Southeast. One is a company that has an expertise in grafting fruity vegetables, tomatoes, eggplant, watermelon, and they want to be in North Carolina. And the other is a company that takes coconut shards and makes them into a product that can be used for hydroponic growing. So we cover the gamut in terms of things that we encounter.
Interesting.
So, Barry, when you're talking to people and trying to sell them on the benefits of doing business in Atlanta, what are some of the aspects that you point out to folks in terms of business advantages of this particular locale?
Sure. Well, I think that we're the Chamber of Commerce for the state of Georgia and for the city of Atlanta, no question. And many of those are known to your listeners, but they're the obvious ones. One is the education system here in Georgia and the kinds of expertise that it produces. The large number of significant corporations that have their head offices here in the Metro Atlanta area, the workforce, as I mentioned, higher education. The airport is still an advantage if you have your office here. I mean, it's the reason that I came to Atlanta, was to be able to travel all over the world and all over North America, and it can be easily done from Atlanta and conveniently done from Atlanta. The cost of living, that you can have employees here who can remain here and not live comfortably. So I think all of those are the incentives that the state of Georgia offers, the city of Atlanta offers for businesses, the whole economic development climate that's positive, the kind of other international relations that we have. While you were at the meeting of a Chinese city yesterday, I was at a South American chamber event.
Right, and we met at the Global Connect.
That's correct.
And so, all the international chambers were.
Especially for us, because of the connections, there's a free trade agreement between Israel and the United States. There's a similar kind of treaty between Israel and the European Union. So there's all sorts of possibilities of partnering with Israel to get product elsewhere in the world. The ports in the south of Georgia, and certainly the expansion of those ports is an incredible asset to be able to bring in product, especially from the Far East. So there are all these tremendous advantages that we have that we try to sell people on.
So as, I mean, your role as Vice President of Trade and Development, you're creating more commerce. You're probably seeing opportunities that exist that people haven't yet capitalized on, or, oh, wow, this is really a business opportunity here. What are some of the things that you see as being big opportunities that companies can take advantage of and grow their business through some of these channels you're talking about?
Well, the one area that I certainly see as a tremendous opportunity is in the whole medical healthcare arena from a variety of areas. We're now working in South Carolina with Blue Cross Blue Shield of South Carolina, one of their business tracks is billing and management of IT for other insurance companies. And so there's this whole arena, there's tremendous opportunity, especially with all the changes taking place.
Right.
Partnering in research, both the private sector and the public sector. There's a tremendous amount of partnership going on between Medical University of South Carolina and Israel now that we've started. We hope to do similar things across the Southeast, and certainly here in Atlanta, we'd love to do more. We've done a little with Emory. We'd like to do more with Emory. I think that there's the whole issue of can we take startup companies and small companies and accelerate their development. And we're talking to Georgia Tech about how we might be able to be creative. They have a Flashpoint program. Is there a program that we might be able to do that's similar to something that Georgia Tech is doing? And could they be a partner of ours in doing this? There are companies we haven't begun to work with that we'd like to work with. Certainly in North Carolina, there are lots of companies, Red Hat and others, that are doing business with Israel. We'd like to do more. So we sort of feel that we have an endless opportunity to do things in all sorts of sectors. And we work with all the economic development organizations, whether they be civic or government, and to be able to do that.
So how do people find out about the American-Israel Chamber of Commerce? Maybe it's a silly question, but obviously people need to know you exist in order to take advantage of all the resources out there. How do you market to your community and get more people involved as members?
Well, we try to do radio programs and to make people aware of it. And we're gratified by that opportunity. And the other is just to get out into the community, meet with people. And, you know, we're a small organization. There are only three professional staff and an office manager, and I'm new. So even adding somebody to the staff is a new venture. Capacity is an issue. I can tell you that having been out and about in the community for the past several months, I'm amazed at how many people do know about us, hold us in very high esteem. Somebody yesterday from Argentina came up to me and said, "You are by far the best binational trade organization that I have ever encountered." They know what we do.
Wow.
You know, we take missions to Israel of business leaders and politicians, so that gets a lot of coverage. So we try to get the word out. People know to contact us, certainly Israeli businesses, and it's like any business endeavor. The more you deal with people, they change jobs, they change companies.
They know you. They bring you along.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Matter of fact, yesterday I was at the Atlanta Speech School. We have a company called Neurotech, a small company in Israel. Actually, it's a social venture capital company. It's not there to make money. It's there to do good. And they have created a new ADHD testing process, which could be of great assistance to those special needs children in schools, both in the public school system and in the private school system, among others. And we had a meeting with the Atlanta Speech School to get some feedback from them about the process and the testing. I had a personal connection. One of my daughters went to the speech school many years ago, and it was very exciting. And they didn't know about us, and we introduced ourselves to them, and it's getting out into the community and taking your what you have to offer, both on a practical basis and in general terms, out into the community and making people aware of it.
So that interests me, just from taking a step back on your particular job. What's a day in the life like for you? I mean, how do you plan your weeks and days?
It's certainly different from my last job, that's for sure. Because at the last job, I did most of my planning was traveling.
Yeah.
And speaking and creating change and doing sort of long range big planning projects.
Sure.
We have assignments. Part of my assignment is our new Eagle Star Gala that we're having on June 12th. So I've been spending a lot of time preparing and getting that in order. And
do you feel like because it's such a small organization from a, you know, people in the office standpoint, you're having to wear a lot of different hats?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, you know, we juggle a lot of responsibilities. It is a bit of a change for me.
Yeah.
But I started my career in a small organization, which I still cherish and have a lot of memories of, and back in Canada. And so, you know, this gets you to the roots and you're tangibly helping people. And so you try to plan the best you can, but things come up. And so my assignments are the sustenance of the organization. How do we maintain our organization? How do we have more members, more sponsors? How do we have more philanthropy to sponsor? We have a philanthropic affiliate that helps our educational work. So how do we do that? Then to learn the business development, the economic development portion, I've been given assignments to do them as we come up to do that. To staff committees. And we do that work as well. And then one of my assignments will be working with the largest corporations in the Southeast to create affinity groups, either companies already doing business with Israel. How do we create those relationships? How do we help them do more? And at the same time, how do we encourage large businesses in the area to do more with Israel or to begin to do business with Israel, that there's technology, expertise, whatever that's available to them that we can help them find and locate and work with. So that's my day, and every day is different, which is why you get up and enjoy going to work every day, because it's a different kind of a day. I get to come this morning and do a radio talk show, and right afterwards I'm meeting with the new student president of Georgia Tech.
How fun.
Every day is different and challenging and enjoyable.
Are you doing some travel with this job or not really?
I haven't yet begun to travel. I will in terms of the philanthropy of it. My colleague, Tom Glazer, a present CEO who's been here since our founding president and CEO, travels, and he's primarily does our work with South Carolina. We just had a program in Huntsville, Alabama. There's going to be another program in Columbia. We hope in the fall to begin to move into North Carolina again, and Mississippi and Alabama when the opportunities warrant.
Now, the philanthropy also falls under your realm of what you're responsible for. Talk a little bit about some of the educational programs and the philanthropic efforts of the chamber.
Sure. We want to educate people as to, and I think this is really important, Israel has greened the desert. It's resettled millions of refugees, and has a value system. And then for me, most importantly, what struck me coming to the chamber after working in the philanthropic world for 25 years, although we didn't all just do philanthropy, it brings state-of-the-art solutions to the most complex business and societal problems. When you think about it, the beginning of the chamber, they work with the Shepherd Spinal Center, and unfortunately the technology that they were working on together didn't manifest itself in a significant way at the time, but subsequently there's technology to help people who are paraplegics, quadriplegics. There's state-of-the-art diagnostic tests now to determine if you have a heart problem well before you have a heart problem. Netafim, which is a kibbutz company that was established many years ago, drip irrigation. Everybody now in their front yard in Atlanta, Georgia, has a drip irrigation system to water their grass. But more importantly, it's fed most of Africa.
Yeah.
Israel's been in Africa for years and years and years, creating and teaching them about drip irrigation so that water, which is so precious, can be used in an efficient, effective way to grow crops. So for me, that's the key issue. How do we make a difference in this world? It's not just the fact that we're creating business relationships. It's also how do we make a difference? And I think that as part of my job and part of philanthropy are educational opportunities to show, demonstrate to people the difference that Israel's made not only for its citizens, but more importantly for the world and what it's done, so that we try to educate people about that. And then in terms of philanthropy, we have to sustain our organization.
Sure.
It's a small organization. And in so doing, we try to foster interest in people wanting to perpetuate our organization, sustain it. We want to involve the next generation in our program. We're starting to get 20 and 30 somethings involved with us. That's important. All of our leaders are probably in their 40s now. So years ago, we got them involved at an early stage. So we see the value of being able to do that. We think that there's great opportunities in partnering with institutions of higher education, whether it be Georgia Tech, Emory, the black colleges and universities, Kennesaw, whatever it is. We have interns that come into our organization, so that we want those ties, and philanthropy can certainly go a long way to help fostering those sorts of relationships as well.
Now, this might be also kind of a very basic question, so forgive me if it is, but do you find that companies who have not worked with Israeli companies or with Israel in general in the past are reluctant or hesitant because of the political environment in Israel?
It's a good question. The answer to that question is they are not reluctant to participate. Money is money.
Yeah.
People want to return to their shareholders, or if it's a privately held business,
sure,
increase it. At times, there is reluctance, given the sensitivity of things going on in the Middle East, to be very public about it. But there are a lot of companies that have no qualms whatsoever.
So there's people that sort of want to still do it because they want to make the money, but they don't necessarily want to publicize it because
right,
they don't want people to sort of have a view of them one way or the
other.
But
the largest companies in the world, I mean, you know, if there wasn't Israel, there wouldn't be an iPad. The Pentium chip
right, yeah,
developed and created in Israel.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Apple doesn't have a problem. Intel doesn't have a problem.
Sure.
Facebook. I mean, all these companies are now doing business in Israel and are very public about it.
Yeah.
So
that helps for smaller companies having concerns. You can sort of point to that and say, hey,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Is there sensitivity? Yeah. But I think that there's also sensitivity with doing business with other countries in the world.
Oh, for sure. No question about
right,
that.
Yeah.
And what
no
it brings
question
up.
International relations
That's
are
correct.
Always
That's great.
Diplomacy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people take sides. People have opinions. There's concerns, you know, about volatility in different regions, of course, always. And you're right, not just in Israel, all over the world.
So there's sensitivities. Listen, I don't have to tell everybody there are things going on amongst Middle East countries that are being done quietly that no one knows about. So
let's talk about those. Let's get some political
secrets.
Tune in
next time.
That's right.
That's right. Absolutely.
Totally. I want to just, I was looking around while we were talking, and I just have to bring this up because we talked about Facebook a couple of times, and then we'll come back to you, Barry, because
it
is pretty fascinating. But I just saw this article that said Facebook is now partially responsible for something like, I don't have the stats in front of me, but like 2/3 of all divorces or something
I saw that too.
Because of his marriage, they're like bringing up marriage, divorce, whatever. And apparently some kind of crazy number, more than half of the current divorce cases have the word Facebook in the wording of the document. Like, that's one of the complaints.
Now become part of, right, the evidence being brought against people.
Oh, I'm sorry, I got it wrong. It's more than a third. More than a third. Less than a half. But still.
It's really scary to me how much Facebook is infiltrating all areas
of our lives.
Society.
And yet they still couldn't have a good IPO. Come on.
Well,
right.
But there's competition. There's been a lot of discussion lately, and I was just invited to open a site myself in Pinterest.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so the question is Facebook's selling point used to be, as I understand it, the number of users that it had, but also the amount of time that people would spend on Facebook.
Yeah.
So the question is, are all these other sites now that
spreading that?
That's great.
Interest. Right. And because technology is so quick to change, innovation can happen so quickly, and creating a website is like
quick
doesn't cost any money.
Right.
I mean, the threats from competition or other, right, the new cool latest
right.
one of the day, it may have peaked.
It may have peaked.
On Thursday, just prior to the IPO.
It may have peaked.
So speaking of a couple other funny pieces of news, Trees Atlanta hired a flock of 100 kudzu-eating sheep.
Shut up.
I'm serious.
I'm going to welcome them onto my property.
And you can go to the party that is going to celebrate the flock's first outing, a breakfast with the sheep party.
We
will be held
at
Chastain Park,
June
8th at 9 a.m.
Wait a minute.
So it's part of the conservation efforts to remove kudzu from acres of our city's green space.
That
stuff is just like...
killer. Killer kudzu.
I see a business opportunity, renting sheep.
Apparently, somebody's doing that. They hired a flock of sheep from somebody. I kind of love that. I might have to go. I might have to go to the thing. Also, it says here the Ritz-Carlton Buckhead is going to provide food for humans at the at the breakfast. So that's all good.
Nice to know. Everyone's needs will be served.
That's right. You can watch the sheep and have breakfast from the Ritz-Carlton Buckhead. That's kind of cool. Are you going to get to actually watch the sheep do their work? Is that the deal?
I would hope. I mean, I don't think you... I don't know. They're like, hey, I'm on break, man.
Can you network with the sheep? Like, hand them a business card and whatever? Maybe it's a networking breakfast with sheep.
Sounds like a good time.
I see a new scene for a Woody Allen movie.
Oh, Lord.
Good one.
It is funny, you know, talking about Israel, because, you know, when you were talking about Israel and water, I mean, that sort of brings me back. You know, kudzu is sort of one of our, not totally unique to us, but certainly, you know, coming from the Northeast myself, we did not have kudzu. So it's kind of a uniquely Southern
phenomenon
problem. But, you know, obviously water, Israel in the middle of the desert, I mean, all the water issues they have to work around, they are, I'm sure, experts in that. So, you know, and now as that becomes more of a global problem and we can't take it for granted anymore, I can see where that technology would be hugely important here.
There's a number of partnering projects with Georgia Power and Mississippi Power on water-related issues. Israel's become the leader in desalinization. It used to be you had to build these huge, huge plants in order to take ocean water and make it into potable water. But now the processes are much smaller, much more efficient, much more cost efficient. And Israel's now selling this technology around the world.
Yeah.
There's the whole issue of how one recycles water that's used in agriculture. Mm-hmm. How can you take water that's excess from what has been taken from the agricultural plants or products and reusing that. I mean, there are many that think that water is the core of the political problem in the Middle East, not anything else.
Right.
It's who controls
certainly
will
the
water sites.
Ultimately the most valuable commodity on the planet.
For sure.
So, and then there's the whole issue of water security, which is a major issue today.
Yeah,
right.
How do you set up systems to ensure that...
the terrorists can't get to it.
Well, not just terrorists, but there's disease and everything else that are possibilities. So that you have to do that as well. So there's all sorts of arenas that Israel has expertise in that now they are taking out to the world.
Barry, before we wrap up, if people want to learn more about the American-Israel Chamber of Commerce, how do they find you?
Well, the best way to find us is on the internet.
Always.
www, and it's our initials, AICCSE.org.
Say that one more time for people.
www.AICCSE.org.
Excellent. Anything else we need to talk about before we wrap up, Ms. Elizabeth?
We've got a great lineup of shows the rest of the week, and we'll be
starting with Southern Hospitality in the next hour.
Coming up next, absolutely. And we've got guests joining us from the Inns at the Peach Trees, the Best Western Inn, as well as Alma Casina. And we are looking forward to chatting with them about their unique version of Southern Hospitality.
Very cool. And of course, 200 Peachtree Show coming up this afternoon at 2 o'clock. And
we'll also be launching a brand new show, spinning off from an existing show next week, which will be Career Advancement Radio, hosted by Dr. Marilyn Carroll. So make sure you tune in to the Good People Show to meet Marilyn and find out about her new show, which will be launching June 11th. So
very
look
exciting.
Forward to that.
Excellent. Yes, Barry. Okay. Barry raised his hand.
No,
it's
just wanted to, because I really didn't give a full commercial to our Eagle Stars Gala,
which
is June 12th.
Yes.
It's a dessert reception at the Westin Atlanta Perimeter North beginning at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, June 12th. At that time, in addition to our keynote speaker, we have awards that we give out. Bob Deutsch from Asheville, North Carolina. Yes, we have an active member from Asheville, North Carolina, who is going to receive our Founders Award. The Israel Economic Mission to the Southern United States is going to receive our Community Partner Award. And then what's exciting to me, and I've been stewarding this process, is we have two awards that we give out to one Israeli Company of the Year that's functioning here in the Southeast. And we have three finalists, Shalag, which is in North Carolina, Alpha Mega, which is in the Metro Atlanta area, and Amiad, which is a water systems company here in North Carolina as well. And then the Deal of the Year finalists, and this is fascinating. Aris, which is in Johns Creek, purchased an Israeli company, Big Band Networks. It's their second Israeli company that they purchased, so they're up for Deal of the Year. Idea Biomedical and the Medical University of South Carolina for a deal for medical technology that's used for clinical trials, a very expensive state-of-the-art machine. And then lastly, Teva Pharmaceuticals and Procter & Gamble for their new joint venture in over-the-counter drugs.
Wow.
Which could be, at the end of the day, a $4 billion business.
Awesome.
So we'll be announcing the winner at that time.
Some pretty big deals some pretty exciting commerce.
And if people want to attend the gala, can they still do that?
Yes, they can still do that. They can call our office or they can go on our website and register that way as well.
All right. And, of course, if anyone didn't get the website, you could probably just Google American Israel Chamber of Commerce, I imagine.
Southeast
right?
region, that's correct.
All right. Awesome. All right. Well, that is our show for today. We will see you back here next week for another episode of Good Morning Atlanta. Stay with us for the next show, Southern Hospitality. We'll be back in just a few minutes.